This is the Family Culture Movement. Are you ready to break up with the dysfunctional beliefs and behaviors that have been passed on to you from generations past and from our dominant culture and start parenting with intention? Then you're in the right place. The Family Culture Movement is where you'll learn how to take inventory of the narratives and social conditioning shaping your family dynamics and say no to the dominant culture. I'm your host, Jody Chafee. I'm going to help you break dysfunctional patterns and lead your family with confidence and resilience. Hey, if this is your first time tuning in, be sure to check out the last episode of the Family Culture Movement with Christine Owens, who's my guest. We talk about home education and education in general and how to empower your kids to master their own education. Hey, what's up, Family Culture Hackers? I am so excited to introduce to you my next guest, Sherry Dunleavy. Sherry is a former NBC News anchor. Sherry Dunleavy served the Wheeling, West Virginia area for nearly 30 years, both on television and radio. Today, she is the best-selling author, inspirational speaker, graduating grief coach, and podcast host. Her number one best-selling book, How Can I Help?, was written to help people know exactly what to say and do when the people they love and care about are hurting. Sherry helps women step out of their pain and provides them with support, encouragement, and tools to step back into living their lives on purpose and with passion and joy. Welcome, Sherry.
Thank you, Jody. My pleasure to be here.
I'm excited to go into this conversation with you about grief and how challenging that can be to know how to manage our grief or the grief of our loved ones. But first, I want to do a little icebreaker question, and that is, what did you want to be when you grew up, when you were a kid?
Wow. I wanted to be one of the Brady Bunch.
Any of them specifically? I mean,
I really wanted to be a child actor is what I wanted to be.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You know, I wanted to be on the Brady Bunch.
Nice.
Yeah. So that's what I wanted to be when I was a kid.
How did that shape who you become? Or what did you, when you reflected on that, did it change your, make your choices or affect your choices?
Well, I live in a very small area and I went to a small parochial high school. And so we didn't really have any outlets for drama or anything. So I picked the next best thing and went into television news.
Nice. Yeah.
So I was still in front of an audience. And so, yeah, it's morphed. I'm not an actress, but you know, I think I just had a need to communicate, and yeah, that's what I do.
That's awesome. That is so awesome. I love that. Whenever I hear that, every time I watched Star Search, I always wanted to be on Star Search when I was a kid.
See?
That's funny.
Yeah.
That's awesome. So what was the pivotal experience that brought you to where you are now, coaching about grief and counseling people through their grief?
Well, I was in television and I started at my television station right out of college. It was 30 miles from my hometown where I grew up. So I was kind of like a hometown girl, and my audience watched me get married and have my first baby. And they were with me when I was pregnant with my second baby. And that's when the wheels fell off the cart, so to speak. All of our hopes, dreams, and plans of being a family of four turned into a family of three. My son, Brandon, was born and he lived for 29 days and then he died. Mm-hmm. And so that's when we entered into this world of grief and all of these things that we've never talked about, we've never really discussed. Usually we have, if we lose anyone in our life, it's usually, you know, a grandparent at first. It follows a course of a normal human life until it doesn't. And so this is not what we are expecting. It was something that we were praying would not happen. We were hoping for the best, although we knew it could happen. Mm-hmm. And when it finally did, just we didn't know what to do. I had a 3-year-old son who saw his mommy pregnant, and then but he was too little to, they wouldn't let him in the neonatal intensive care unit, so he never got to meet his brother. And then we really didn't have a viewing we had a funeral, but we didn't have a viewing, so he didn't get to see him there. And then his mother comes home with a flat stomach, no baby, and it was just so confusing, right? And I remember the reason that when we first found out that there were problems, it was at our first ultrasound. I just wanted to know whether I should keep my boy clothes or whether I got to shop for pink clothes, you know? Right. And all of a sudden, Brandon died and I realized he didn't have any clothes. I had nothing to bury him in. So I buried him in my son's baptismal outfit because I had nothing for him. So, you know, and just really odd things. We had to go and shop for a burial plot. And then we realized that, well, they don't really sell baby burial plots. They bury babies on their parents' plots. So then we had to buy ours. And it was just all these things that,
wow, traumatic.
We weren't prepared for, right? Because we don't talk about these things.
No. And that's, you know, when you're preparing for, you're thinking of a new life, not the conclusion of a life. And that's, that's, nobody does prepare you for that. And when you have those expectations built up around a child, that's incredibly heartbreaking. Thank you for sharing that story, because that I have friends that, a good friend of mine, her baby in utero was diagnosed with something and they knew he wasn't going to survive, past birth. And that's still something that's really hard for them. And they won't spend a few years and that's really hard. And so I'm proud of you that you were able to come on and share that story. And probably even, what was that like when people would see that going on in your audience? What impact did that have on your
Well, the first thing
process?
Was, is if you missed the news that night, you didn't know. And so when I would go out in public, first question everyone would ask me, how was my baby? And then I realized, oh my gosh, I am going to ruin your day. Because I'm going to have to tell you that he died. And then you are going to be kicking yourself the rest of the day saying, why did I say that? Why did I? And they didn't know, you know? Yeah. So, you know, it was very difficult, but I will tell you that so many people lifted us up and carried us through and supported us. I mean, one day this big, huge manila envelope arrived in the mail, and some beautiful teacher had her class sit down, and they all, you know, created beautiful sympathy cards for me and my family. They were all from like a first grade class. And just wonderful, beautiful things that people did and lifted us up and loved us and carried us through. So we felt truly loved and supported through this whole thing. We really did.
And that's beautiful, that idea of the teacher having the first grader being able to, the first grade class at that young age, helping them to understand grief and rallying around people who are suffering and grieving. That's really beautiful. That's a good way to start this conversation around how do we talk to our families and things like that. Because what I want to go into with you in this conversation is why don't we talk enough about grief? You know, like you said, when you were going through that, nobody prepared you for this. And that's not something that anybody ever wants to go through, and you don't want to talk about it to think, well, why should I prepare that? Prepare for the worst. I don't want to prepare for that. So what do you think when, you know, I go into this conversation, these conversations about the dysfunctional beliefs of society, right, that are keeping us from progressing, and what you mentioned to bring into this show today is that we don't talk enough about grief.
No. We don't at all. I mean, what do they say? The only two things in life that are certain are death and taxes. Mm-hmm. And taxes we talk about till the cows come home, but death. And someone said to me, and I thought this was just like you are so right. Death is something that touches every single person's life. And yet when it happens, we act shocked by it. Yeah. You know, like this is going to happen to each and every one of us. And if you get through life without experiencing it, it means that you died before everyone else. Right. You know, I mean, seriously, that's the only way that you can avoid it. But first of all, because it's so uncomfortable, you don't want to think about it. But I will tell you that I had a very young understanding of death in the way that my mom did something. I don't know if it was by design, but it was brilliant. When I was a little girl, right, like around kindergarten, I can remember, a friend of hers' mother died. And my mom took me to the funeral home. And so that was my first experience with death and seeing a deceased body and getting all the questions and curiosity without the emotional attachment, because right. I didn't know who that was, right? Because little kids are afraid of dead bodies. They're afraid of ghosts. They're afraid of, you know, all the horror stories, you know? Mm-hmm. So if you address that in a non-emotional way prior to them having to experience emotional grief, I think that that is a much better scenario. You can get that part out of the question. If you are so inclined to do that, but so you get that, but then the emotional of, you know, you see some of the Disney movies are the most traumatic movies of them all, because they are always losing a mother or somebody's a father or a child. Yeah. Right. Yeah. And so, you know, just that we when we take our children to see those Disney movies, that's a discussion. That's a perfect way for us to have the discussion about that.
Yeah.
And start that conversation. I think where we have failed our children in our culture is that we try to protect them from all of this.
Yes. Okay. So that's where I want to protect them from all
yeah. of this. And we're not protecting them. It's children are very resilient. They take in what makes sense to them and they let go of what doesn't. And so the more you talk about it, the more it just becomes a normal conversation.
So and, what are people afraid of? Why don't we have those conversations?
Because we're not comfortable talking about it.
Right.
Right. Because we're not comfortable talking about it. Mm-hmm. So when Brandon died, I wonder, because my son literally went from being 2 to 3 during this process. And so trying to explain this to a 3-year-old is so, so difficult. Right. Yeah. And especially because he didn't go to the funeral home, didn't see the baby. He has no concept. So, but I was never afraid of talking about death. Mm-hmm. And I always took him when we went to the funeral home, he always went with us and we always discussed this. And we talk about this all the time now. I mean, it's not an uncomfortable conversation.
Right. Well, do you think that people are afraid of talking about it because either they don't understand what happens after we die, or is it because they're afraid of how they're going to react to people's grief? Which one is the most scary?
I think it's because it makes us feel uncomfortable and we're afraid that we're not going to have an answer to what our children ask. Mm-hmm. Maybe. You know, I don't know, but I don't know is an okay answer. And I don't know can also be, let's find out together. This is what we're finding. What do you think about this? Now, there was no question in our family because of our beliefs. You know, we know where our son is. Our son is in heaven. And that's just, you know, I believe that with every ounce of my being. And I believe that my son is with me now and we co-create together. Mm-hmm. So I have a very religious background, but I would say a deeply spiritual life. And I truly believe that. And it's easy for me to talk about. And right. I talk about that with my son and whoever. If you don't adopt that belief, that's okay. You don't have to have that. And so that's where I have a very difficult time. Because I can't not have that as part of my discussion. So if you don't have that spirituality or that belief, then
it's even harder, I think.
I would think that it is very harder. It is that much harder, that much more difficult. Now, you were saying something else that was very interesting, and that's actually why I wrote my book, is you were saying, well, is it because they don't feel comfortable in how they would show up for the other person, of their grief, of being afraid of making them cry, or being in the presence of someone's pain and being uncomfortable with them crying and not feeling good or not knowing what to say, mm-hmm. or afraid that if they say something, it's going to trigger them and make it worse for them. And so that's why I wrote my book, because when we lost our son, even though I was telling you we were lifted up and we were loved through this by family members, friends, and strangers, three of our closest friends just dropped out of our lives. Mm. And that was devastating.
Yeah. Yeah. When you're already experiencing a loss and then to have that redoubled.
My one girlfriend called shortly after Brandon died, and I was expecting her to say, okay, my mom has the kids, hang tight. I'll be on my way. And instead she said, I'm sorry, I just can't handle this. And I didn't hear from her again. And then 6 years later, the phone rings and it's her. And she just was thinking of me and wanted to catch up. And after I got off the phone, I thought, what was that about?
Yeah.
You know, like, first of all, we don't get to revisit, like nothing had happened because like something huge had happened.
Yeah.
And so anyway, that is actually when I really started thinking, well, what was that about? And why do people back out of your life?
Right.
And
the term fair weather friend comes to my mind.
Well, yeah. And if there was a, if there was a resource, that's what I kept thinking. If there was a resource out there that could have told people how to show up, how to be there, what to do, what to say, because it's either you're so afraid. It's like when people that have cancer tell me that people acted like I was contagious.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they just stayed away. They acted like what I had was contagious. And I think it's just that it scares them so much that they cannot even, come to grips with it happening to me. So you think about losing a child and you're pregnant or you just had a baby and you think, I don't know what I would do. And it's so frightening that you just can't even literally go there. I can't go there. So I think that's scenario number one. Scenario number two is what I said, is that you don't know what to do or say.
Right,
you've never had it modeled. You've never had to use this skill. And scenario number three is I really want to do or say something, but I don't know what that is. And I'm afraid that I'm going to make it worse if I say the wrong thing.
Right.
So again, I would look for this resource. I would go Google it. I would go on Amazon. I would walk into the bookstore. And every time I would walk out, I would hear, you can look all you want, Sherry, but you're the one that has to write it. If you want it, then you need to write it. And I'm like, I write news copies. I don't write books. You know, I never had a desire to be an author, but there was such a need.
There was a gap there. People don't know how to talk to their loved ones about grief, and even people and people experiencing grief don't know. Because as you're talking, I'm thinking, you know, I think that a lot of times people who experience grief often isolate themselves as well. Not just that people leave their lives, right? Don't do people who are experiencing grief also try to isolate themselves because they don't want to bring people down or they don't want to have to go through that awkward experience of people not knowing how to respond?
And I did that. Like I said, when I would walk out in public and someone would ask me and I knew I was going to ruin their day.
Right.
You know, so I understand that. But, you know, in January, my husband and my son and I lost our beloved dog. And it was absolutely, outside of losing my son, it was the most devastating thing. I'm still crying about it. But this time I said to my husband and son, I'm not holding back. I don't care. My grief is mine. And when I'm sad, I'm going to be sad, because I had a 3-year-old at the time. And I did grief so much differently back then.
Right.
Because I did not want my 3-year-old's only memory of his mommy being sad all the time. I did not want him to think, mommy always, all I remember is mommy crying over Brandon. I was never good enough. Mm-hmm. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And so I would cry in the shower. or, you know, and so I did it so differently back then.
Yeah.
I think sometimes by necessity. And then a lot of times you think, if I start crying, I'll never stop. But what that does is it delays it and your body holds on to it. And a year later, on Mother's Day night, I sneezed in my sleep and my disc exploded because my body was holding on to my grief because there was no other outlet for it.
Right.
So we must feel these feelings and we must go through it and we must be vulnerable. And I will tell you, because I was vulnerable over the loss of my dog, people showed up and we felt so loved and so supported and so wrapped in, a blanket of love that I just couldn't believe how much that helped. And so I think that when we show outwardly and we are vulnerable with our feelings, it allows people, it triggers something in people that want to show us kindness, that want to show us love. So I think that we need both. Sometimes we need to love on people and sometimes we need to allow them to love on us, right?
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
And so this last bout has really taught me a lot,
That's beautiful. And I, you know, when I think about being able to show love to people who are experiencing grief, I just want to reach out to people, I'll reach out to you and embrace that and help people through that. And one of the things that you talked about in my application form to join me today was that one of the things that people also have a misconception about is that there's no way to heal or that there's no way to overcome. And that if you just experience, when you've experienced grief, that you're just going to have that grief and be grieving forever and ever and ever and ever, right? So why is that? Why do you think that people believe that?
Because it hurts so bad. It hurts so much in the initial stages. It hurts. It's excruciating. It's a pain that we don't know how to deal with.
Yeah.
And it's something we have no control over. We had no control over this a lot of times, right? Mm. So there are a lot of times other things that are mixed in with that. But I noticed that during this COVID pandemic, that a lot of online support groups have been really growing and helping a lot of individuals who can't get to in-person support groups. Look how many, you know, millions of people have died this year and how many funerals we haven't had. And it's been horrible. And so the only thing we have are these online groups. And what I was finding in these online groups is that these new grievers would come in and there would be grievers that, you know, are 5, 10, 15 years down the road telling them they'll never be happy again. This will continue a lifetime. And I thought this isn't right. This isn't right. We have a choice. We have a choice as to whether we will heal. You know, it came for me, and it's important to tell your story. Mm-hmm. That is a part of the healing. And if we can sit and bear witness and listen to someone as they tell their story, and I don't care if it's 10, 15 times, and you've heard it over and over and over, you are extending a gift of presence and sacred space to this person to allow their brain to process what is going on and allow the healing process to take place. And I was in a support group. My husband and I were in a support group. And I think that it was about maybe 12 to 18 months later where I said, I don't want to go back here anymore. And he said, why? These people are lovely. But see, new people kept coming in. And so then I was picking, you know, listening to them as they were processing their story, absorbing their sadness, and then telling mine. And I said, I don't want to feel horrible grief every other Tuesday of my life. I just don't want to. I want to start feeling better. And there's no one out there telling you that you can, or that it's okay, or that you shouldn't mm-hmm. feel guilty, because I feel God gave us all an individual life. And I don't want to get to the end of mine and God say, Sherry, what did you do with that 50 years that I gave you after Brandon died? And I say, God, I laid in a corner and cried the rest of my life because you took my baby. That's a waste of my life. That's a waste of the talents that he gave me, right? And so I want to be able to say, well, this is what I've done, and this is how I've helped others, you know, who are through this, and help, let them lift them up and let them know that every life matters. My son's life mattered. It was only 29 days. He never met another soul, but his life impacted other people. And if you are still alive and you're breathing and your heart is beating, then your life is impacting someone else's as well. So is that impact a positive one, where they want to aspire to live their life and make something of it and contribute to this world? Or is it one where they want to shrink back in on themselves and be bitter and angry and sad and frustrated? And the only thing other people are going to say is, I don't want to be that.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that some people, though, they feel like they stay in their grief. And to correct me if I'm wrong, because a friend of mine, they lost their son when he was 10, and it seems like their grief is founded in this sadness of the life that he is not going to live. What are your thoughts about that?
My thoughts on that are that we have an appointed amount of time. I just feel that God gives us that assigned time, and that's what we're supposed to do. Someone sent my husband and I a card, and they said, your son in his 29 days brought more people to their knees to God on his behalf than most people have in their lifetime. How blessed you were to be his mother. And so I took three things from that. The first thing I took from that is, I'm the mom of an accelerated soul. He did his job and accomplished it. And he did it in 29 days. Wow. I was just shy of 38 years old at the time. And I thought, oh my gosh, if he made that impact in 29 days, what the heck am I doing in 38 years? Like, seriously, we always think about what we want to be when we grow up, how many children we want to have, if we want to be married, you know, we have our life planned out, but how many of us really think about the impact and contribution that we want to make and how we show up in life and who we want to be and become, who we want to grow into, right? And I took that very seriously. So that was lesson number two. And lesson number three was, something as insignificant as a short note into a card can change someone's life, because that woman changed mine and she changed the whole trajectory of what I do.
Wow. So basically what I get from what you say is that people live exactly the amount of days that they should, and that's enough to accomplish the work that God has given us to do, and that we should feel inspired by those who make that an impact because of their lives to make an impact with our lives. Yes. And to allow other people to, you know, that we can recognize each other for that impact that we're making. We really need to express that gratitude and express that appreciation, that love that we have for each other, because life is just so short.
It is. If we have learned nothing else through this pandemic, have we not learned that? Right. This brings us back to ourselves, and you don't have to believe that, but it's something that I truly, truly, truly believe, that all life matters. It doesn't matter how long it is. It doesn't matter how short it is, and all life can make an impact. So my son, I don't know that he was even conscious of the impact that his life made, but I am. Mm-hmm. I am. We all have a choice in this. If you think about it, the problem is that it's too scary to think about. The problem is that we live in a state of fear. We live in a state of fear of dying, but we also live in a state of fear of truly living.
Mm-hmm. 100%. Yeah. Yeah. I think that's thank you for that quote card on my tip of this episode. No, that's exactly right on, right? That we're so afraid of, and you know, I think that actually carries into the solution, right? Of how do we respond to people in grief? We are afraid to respond or to interact because really that means living more in a way. If we have to interact with people's grief, if we have to show up for them, if we have to feel those feelings. Mm-hmm. So I'd like to go into now, like, what is the solution for people who are, you know our friends or family members are grieving? What is a solution? What is a way that we can show up for them? What are some things we can do?
Well, the first thing that I would ask you is, what kind of friend do you want to be? Mm. Right? So if you want to be a surface friend, then you don't have to do anything. You know, you can get by with a praying hands emoji on Facebook if you want, right? But if you truly, if it really, the relationship matters to you, then you're going to be there for them. And I know that it be there. So it can take on many roles. And especially during COVID, you really just couldn't go and plop down in someone's living room with them, right? We couldn't do that. But we have technology now. We can get on a Zoom call. We can get on a FaceTime. We can use this little contraption that, you know, is everything but what it originally is a phone. And we can dial a number and we can hear a voice and talk to someone on the other end. And, you know, a lot of times a grieving person is not going to answer. Mm. When my dog died, I didn't talk to anybody for a couple of days. I couldn't. But my friends left me voice messages and I heard the love and support in their voice. And they didn't leave it up for me to call them back. They called me back a couple of days later. Hey, I'm just checking on you. And when I was ready to talk, I answered the phone. Okay. When I was ready to talk, I answered the phone. And so what I love about my book is it gives so many different suggestions because not everything is going to make you comfortable. I had a friend that had a brain tumor and, quite frankly, I was scared to talk to him. They told me that his speech was impaired. I was just terrified, but I wanted to show up and support him in the way that I could, And so I sent him a card every single week from the time he was diagnosed until the day he died. And one day the phone rang and he called me to tell me how much those notes had kept him going. So even though I couldn't show up in a way that was scary for me, I was still able to make him feel loved and supported in a way that made me feel comfortable. But if I can say to other people, this isn't about you. It's not about you. What kind of friend do you want to be? Because your friends need you. Your family needs you. And if that's not important to you, that's one thing. But if it's important to you, you got to show up.
Well, and I think that is part of the issue right now, especially during COVID. We need to make it important to us. We need to actually make a deliberate effort to make it important to us because right now we're so disconnected. Whereas when COVID hit, you know, I'm being an introvert, it was like, hey, I don't have to make up any lame excuse about why I want to stay in or why I don't want to contact, you know? And so actually it became more of a challenge actually to say, well, even though COVID is going on and we don't have this physical interaction, I need to make a deliberate effort to care more about people, even though this like has made me want to become almost recluse to be like, I just want to stay in and not talk to anybody, you know, in a way, because I just want to be a private person. Right. But I think that is what the challenge is, that COVID has also brought up a lot of like resourcefulness. Like you mentioned, we have these computers, we have FaceTime, we have all this different technology and our phones that we can just pick up and call, but we have to make a deliberate choice for it to make it important to us. Because I think we're getting too comfortable in our like distance from people in a way.
Absolutely. I mean, send a card, but when you send a card to someone, write a note. And if that person that they lost, if you knew that person and you knew them, share a story, share a favorite memory, share something that, you know, made you laugh when you were in that share something about that person that you loved, because chances are you are going to be giving a gift to that person because they might not know that aspect of their loved one, right? If you knew if I knew your dad from work, because we worked for 30 years together, he might have been a real cut up at work, but he might have been the strict disciplinarian at home. So you would not see the fun loving, great side of him, right? But if his coworkers kept telling you these stories, you would be loving that. And that would be a gift, right?
Yeah.
And so there's so many gifts that we can be giving people at this time. Seriously, so many gifts that, and love and compassion and kindness that, you know, when, and I'm going to go back to the loss of my dog just because it's the most recent loss.
Yeah.
When Ollie died, I was so devastated. And my one friend, she kept texting me. She said, there are so many people sending you love and light right now. And I said, well, I don't feel it. And she said, well, you will. And I said, well, I don't. And then I was doing a meditation about, I don't know, 2 weeks later. And they asked me, they had us put our hands, it was a guided meditation, said, put your hands on your heart and think about the people that you are grateful for. Now, my heart felt shattered. But all of a sudden, I started thinking about every message, every phone call, every card, every gift, every text. And I literally, it was palpable, the energetic flow of love and healing pouring into my heart. I could feel it. I could feel it filling that hole. There is power in prayer. There is power in love. There is power in energy, in good thoughts, good vibes, whatever it is. And it feels like it was like this cosmic blanket of love that was wrapped around us. It's real. Yeah. I don't know how else to say it. It's real.
So that brings me to what I want to ask you about is, as a griever, you know, you mentioned be vulnerable and now you're mentioning be grateful, allow that love to flow into your heart. What other things can we do as people who are grieving to be able to have, I guess, faith or trust that at some point we can feel peace?
The first thing I would say is that if people show up in awkward ways, be glad they showed up. Feel their intent. If their intent was loving, then extend to them the grace, because the only reason that they're saying these cliches and these things that you're taking offense to is because they don't know what to say, because we don't talk about these things. So if they show up awkwardly, extend grace to them, because if they have loving intentions, accept it for what it is. Okay. We know they're not better off. You know, I mean, like you, they're not that, you know, I remember some woman saying it would drive me crazy. They would say he's better off. He's not better off. He's 6 feet under. He's better off in my arms and he can't be in my arms. And I understand that anger, and that's early grief. But if you think about this, did that person say that to make you angry? No, they said that just because they didn't know what to say. And they just leaned on that because they wanted to make you feel good. So I would say that accept the love for what it is, no matter how awkwardly it might come. And I would say, make your choice. Are you going to survive this and get through this? Because see, if you can move through, if you are stuck in asking why and living in the land of why, you're going to be going around in circles, because there's not ever going to be an answer that's good enough, ever. There's never going to be an answer that's going to give you closure. There's never going to be an answer that's going to change anything. You are living without the person you love. A better question to ask is, what now?
Yeah. Yeah.
What do I do now? And if you can just shift your mind that little bit, that might be all it takes. Because when you look in and ask that question, what now, all of a sudden you're thinking forward. You're thinking forward. Yeah. Because so many people say, well, I don't want anything because I can't have them. Mm-hmm. Then you're not going anywhere. If you lay, you decay, right? If you lay, you decay. Wow. Yeah. And another thing was that I realized that my son's journey was my son's journey. It was a chapter in mine. Hmm. I still have all of this out here. I still have the rest of the book to finish. I don't want to finish it as the victim. Could never do anything again, right? Yeah. So how do you want to write the rest of your book?
That's beautiful. 100%. I think that that's really beautiful to be able to, you know, not to, you know, that was a chapter in your book and that's a vital part of that, story.
Yeah.
But how much more do you honor, can you honor that loved one by going on and continuing to write those chapters going forward? Yeah.
I just feel, I talk more about my son now and more people know my son, Brandon, now than have known him for years. Right.
Wow.
And he died 22 years ago. So it'll be 22 years in April, but I could not and would not let my son's death define me, but I absolutely could let it refine me of who I was going to become. And I did not want to be bitter and angry and sad all of my life. I did not want to be sick and tired of being sick and tired. You know, I mean, I just didn't want to feel that way anymore.
Is it hard to have that strength though? Is it hard to, when you're in that, like, at what point do you start to give that strength?
It's not easy. Yes. I mean, you know, it's not easy by any stretch of the imagination. I think that's why a lot of people get stuck, right? Because they realize that they're going to have to make some changes. And the thing is, they don't like those changes.
Right.
They didn't like those changes, you know, and some people, well, if I can't, you know, I have some beautiful life lessons I've learned as a result of the life and death of my son, Brandon. Right. Now, would I rather have my son, Brandon? Absolutely. But that's not a choice. It's not a choice. And we act like it is, right?
The choice is how you go forward and what you do going forward.
And there's a lot of guilt. You know, a lot of people, how can I move forward when my son is dead? Because you're alive. Because you get to.
Yeah.
Because God has given you another day. And so, you know, I think because I believe we have appointed days, I never think of my son like being, this coming up will mark him being 22 years old at the end of this month. Mm-hmm. But I've never, ever thought of Brandon as a 1-year-old, a 2-year-old, a 3-year-old, a 4-year-old, a 5-year-old, whatever. I've never thought about the prom he missed or this or that. Why? That is going to cause me nothing but misery. Why would I do that to myself? Would you let your friends do that? Would you talk to your friends like that? Like, when another thing I did when my dog Ollie died was I talked lovingly to myself. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And I said, it's okay. You can cry instead of, why are you still crying over this dog? This is ridiculous. Do you not know what people were thinking? But I talked to myself, Sherry, it's okay. You're very sad. Yes. And it's fine. So we need to talk to ourselves and love ourselves and give ourselves the grace to say, I'm hurting and it's okay. And I'll be fine. I'm not fine now, but I know I will be.
And to not dwell on the what if, or if only, or because I think that even the same way with, I mean, my personal grief isn't because of loss per se, but I often look back on my life and my grief over the life that I wish that I had been able to live. Yeah. And so sometimes the grief spikes when I say, if only at this point in my life, I had made this decision.
Oh.
And that's when I start to get really frustrated. And it's like, well, so basically what you're saying is that we just need to look forward and not keep looking at the, if only, or if this is what had happened, then this is how it would have been, because we just don't even know. We don't even know the reality of that, right? Like that, like you said, our days are numbered and our children's days are numbered and the lives that we live, this is the journey that we're on. And we can't make the choice of if only we'd had it a certain way, but we can make a choice of what are we doing with it? The life that we have.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. I was giving a talk yesterday and I was telling everyone, you know, listen, you know, you get in the car, but if you're always looking in the rearview mirror, two things are going to happen. You're going to go around in circles constantly like a dog chasing his tail, or you're going to crash.
Yeah.
You have to drive forward. You have to look forward. You have to look on the horizon and see what's out there and see what direction you want to go in. And you glance at the rear view mirror to say, this is where I was, but this is where I'm heading. Right. And yep. You can look back at your memories and you can look back, but you can't constantly live back there. You can't. Yeah. I mean, you can, but you'll never heal.
Yeah. Yeah. So you said that your son was, your other son was three when
he's 25 now.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So what can we do as parents when we're experiencing grief to help our children through their grief?
First of all, I think that we need to, there's no right or wrong way to grieve. And men and women seem to grieve differently. And that was one of the great things about the support group is that a lot of times when someone loses a child, everyone comforts the mother. No one comforts the father because men are more internal with their grief. Okay. And so my son, he lost one of his best friends who died of cancer in high school. And my son just wanted to retreat. And I had to give him that space and I had to give him that time. That's not how I grieve. But that doesn't mean that that's not how he grieved. And it doesn't mean that there is a right or wrong to it. We have to respect that, but we have to let people know that it's okay. And the moment that you're not okay, you need to tell me so that we can take the next step. Mm-hmm. So maybe that's counseling. Maybe that's talking to someone. Maybe that's us having a conversation. But it's okay, however you want to do this, however you want to process this. But the moment that you think you're not okay, you need to let me know.
Wow. That's a powerful conversation to be able to have with a child. Just grieve how you need to, but then let me know if you feel like you're going off the rails. Yeah. Like I'm here for you.
Right. For you. And children grieve, not just death.
Yeah.
Divorce, their parents' divorce, maybe a diagnosis, someone's health. Mm-hmm. Mom or dad lost their job. Now what do we do? Children want to feel safe and secure and make sure that they will be taken care of. And so if you even have that conversation of you will always be loved, you will always be taken care of, you will never be abandoned, and let them ask those questions.
And it's not your fault.
Right. Not your fault. Right. And it's not your fault.
Wow. It's powerful and it's heartbreaking to think of going through all of these things. And I just want to acknowledge that now you've gone through this twice with your family, that it's, that's a beautiful thing that I just think the more I go through my grieving process and life and things like that, the more compassion I feel for people who are going through and experiencing things. I was there when my best friend, I was best friends with a mother-daughter duo, and the mother passed away from cancer. Oh. And I was there. And, that was definitely one of the hardest things that I had to experience. And it's brought me so much more compassion and patience that people experience. They do experience grief so differently. And it's okay to be able to talk about it. It's okay to just do your best to show up, do your best. Right.
And yes. And it's uncomfortable. I guess I tell people we as a culture are not good with being uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And we avoid it at all costs. And whether you're grieving and uncomfortable with your own grieving or you're watching someone you love suffer. Okay. And it makes us feel bad. You know what I mean? Like, it makes us uncomfortable, so we don't go there. We just try to avoid it at all costs. It's going to come up and bite you in the behind. So just, this
embrace,
is life.
Embrace
part
it.
Part of life, life goes like this and like this and like this. Life is never like this. Yeah. We want life to be like this, but you can't have the highs if you don't have the lows.
Exactly. If you try to just avoid all that, you're just going to end up being miserable anyways, right? Like just embrace these ups and downs.
Yes, it's all normal.
So Sherry, I thank you so much for being here and talking about this important subject and being willing to talk about it. Help us to be able to talk about these things. Will you tell us what's coming up for you next and tell us more about your book?
My book is called How Can I Help? Your go-to guide for helping loved ones through life's difficulties. And it really, truly is what to do and what to say. If you don't know, this is a great book. I always say this is the book that every griever, every person should read, and every griever wishes their friends and family would have read. Right. So I always say buy a copy and get five for all your friends. I have one girlfriend that they did a book study with it just so they would know how to support one another when they were going through things. And they talked about these scenarios. Yeah. And that made me so happy because they were talking about those uncomfortable things. Right.
Yep.
So that's my book. And my other project is Graduating Grief. And it is helping people step out of their pain and step into living on purpose and with passion and joy. And if you want more information on that, you can go to graduatinggrief.com and take the quiz or join my group on Facebook.
Awesome. That's awesome. Thank you so much, Sherry. And thank you for opening your heart and telling your story, showing us how we can be vulnerable by showing us what it looks like. I mean, I just think that's one of the scariest parts is being able to talk about our grief with other people and not knowing how they're going to respond, or, you know, knowing how to respond to other people's grief. It's scary, but let's lean into it. Let's lean into it. And
I love that, Judy. Yes.
We're all going to experience grief at some point or another. And more often than not, it's happening now, right? With COVID, with everything going on right in our world right now. So let's all lean into it. Cool. Thank you so much, Sherry. I'm glad you were able to tune in for this episode of the Family Culture Movement. Don't miss my next episode. It will be a solo episode, just me and my thoughts about talking about where I'm going with this mission and this movement of family culture and how it can serve your family to live more intentionally. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of the Family Culture Movement. Please download this episode, subscribe to the show, rate it, and leave a review. Take a screenshot and tag me in a post about your experience with any questions you'd like me to answer on the show for a mention on the podcast. For more tools for shaping your intentional family culture, be sure to sign up for your free membership of the Family Leadership Toolbox at homeandfamilyculture.com. Until next time, remember, Mother Teresa once said, if you want to change the world, go home and love your family.